evening.
Good evening.
A new face tonight. Welcome.
Thank you.
I see you've been practicing Zen before.
Yes. Actually practiced with you for many years.
Oh, it's
Phil Olson.
Phil.
Yes.
Of course you were going to come tonight.
And I'm so sorry, I had no idea. I thought it was going to take me an hour from Palo Alto, and it took an hour just to get to the freeway.
Oh, my word.
It was terrible on the traffic.
Oh, Philip.
I apologize for coming so late.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry you had to suffer all that. That's awful. Yes, we sat at Haiku Zendo. It's wonderful to see you. I thought I'd seen you before, but I could not call it up, and I forgot that Andrea had written and said you were coming.
It's been a very long time.
It has been a very long time. Yeah.
How long a time has it been?
35 years.
It's been...
Oh, that's what I like.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Sure. Amazing. Let's do introductions around.
Wendy.
I'm
Philip. I'm Samuel.
Jeffrey.
Judy.
Carolyn.
I think a lot of people are either down with the heat or watching the debate tonight.
Far out of town, there's a lot of people out of town.
That's true, they are too. Yeah.
On hikes in Japan.
Hiking in Japan, yeah. If you all have Facebook, you should see Hisayo's pictures. Mm. They're just beautiful of Japan. Mm. Just exquisite. They're having a wonderful time. Well, Philip, we're at the end of reading Refining Your Life, or From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, Dogen's essay on cooking. At least it starts out to be like that, but it's more about how to live a life. We've gotten to the very last bit of it. So he gives, Dogen gives examples of great teachers who started out as Tenzos and did really, really well. Bai Zhang and Dongshan. there's one of them who was a teacher and gave many learned talks, and finally, the Tenzo burst out laughing in the middle of one of the talks and said, "Teacher, you don't know anything. You don't understand." And he was shocked and realized that it was true. So Dogen points out that Tenzos can do that too. Clarify things a little bit. So this is my favorite part, really, because he says, actually, when working in any position of responsibility, not only as Tenzo, but as any officer or assistant, or I would say anywhere that we go, strive to maintain a spirit of joy and magnanimity. It doesn't say knuckle down and sit hard and be good. It says cultivate a spirit of joy and magnanimity. A joyful spirit is one of gratefulness and buoyancy. You should consider this carefully. If you'd been born into some heavenly realm, you would most likely have only become attached to the pleasures of that realm, neither taking time nor opportunity to awaken the Bodhi spirit. Nor would you likely be to feel any particular necessity for practicing the Buddha Dharma. Much less would you be able to prepare meals for the three treasures, despite their being the highest and most worthy of all things. In the early instructions, we find this passage: the Sangha is the most precious of all things. Such a community manifests a refined posture devoid of fabrication about the world. Devoid of fabrication. So we don't put on airs, I guess you could say. It's not special. It's just simple and plain. How fortunate we are to have been born as human beings, given the opportunity to prepare meals for the three treasures. Our attitude should truly be one of joy and gratefulness. So then he says we might have been a lowly animal or an insatiable spirit or some other kind of birth or come out as a demon, and what a miserable life that would have been. So we wouldn't be able to practice the Dharma in any of those conditions. Our bodies and minds would be bound by the limitations and afflictions of those worlds, and we would have to suffer their burdens. In other words, being human for all that it is, how hard it is to be human. Still, it's the best. Therefore, rejoice in your birth into the world, where you're capable of using your body freely to offer food to the three treasures. Merit of working as a Tenzo will never decay. So he then goes on to suggest another kind of mind, as well as joyful mind and magnanimous mind. And that is the mind or attitude of a parent. In the same way that a parent cares for an only child, keep the three treasures in your mind. A parent, irrespective of poverty or difficult circumstances, loves and raises a child with care. How deep is a love like this? Only a parent can understand it. A parent protects the children from the cold and shades them from the hot sun with no concern for his or her own personal welfare. Only a person in whom this mind has arisen can understand it. And only one in whom this attitude has become second nature can fully realize it. This is the ultimate in being a parent. In the same manner, when you handle water, rice, or anything else, you must have the affectionate and caring concern of a parent raising a child. And finally, he goes on to talk about magnanimous mind. Big mind is like a mountain, stable and impartial. Exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Having a magnanimous mind means being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. When carrying something that weighs an ounce, do not think of it as light, and likewise, when you have to carry 50 pounds, do not think of it as heavy. Don't get carried away by the sounds of spring, nor heavy-hearted upon seeing the colors of fall. So if somebody asks you what's your favorite season, it's the one we're in, right? This one. This is the best. View the changes of the seasons as a whole and weigh the relativeness of light and heavy from a broad perspective. He said, be very clear about all this. All the great teachers down through the ages have learned the meaning of magnanimity, not merely from writing the character for it, but through the various events and circumstances of their lives. Even now, we can clearly hear their voices expounding the most fundamental truths and the ramifications of those truths for our lives. They were men and women whose eyes were open to what is most vital in life, a practice, enabling us to have contact with the Buddha, the reality of life. Their very lives manifested the sole purpose of the true self. Whether you are the head of a temple, a senior monk, or other officer, or simply an ordinary monk, do not forget the attitude behind living out your life with joy, having the deep concern of a parent, and carrying out all your activities with magnanimity. So the translator uses Uchiyama Roshi, some of his translations and his comments on this part, and I thought I would share that part too. If I can find it. Uchiyama Roshi gave a farewell talk when he left Antaiji. He decided to retire, which doesn't always happen. Often an abbot of a little temple, like Koban's brother was the abbot of Jokoji in Japan, they die with their boots on. They just keep on going, working really hard until they're done. But Uchi Amaroshi was a very practical guy. And he stopped being self-conscious as a young man and just did what he thought was the right way. He threw away all the chanting and the fancy business in the Zendo and just had everybody sit, only sit. He had his own very simple ideas. So he said, the six types of Zen, he pointed out, were really important to know about. There's six different ways of being a Zen student. And he says it pretty much works out that the depth of one's zazen becomes determined by the attitude with which one sits. The so-called Rokudo Zen has no connection with Shikantaza. It is best to stay away from these types of Zen. First of all, Jigoku Zen. He said, you know, there are some people who, upon just hearing the word zazen, get all nervous. This occurs particularly among priests. I am talking about the kind of priests who are required to live for a certain period of time in an official sodo in order to receive papers which entitle them to be called priests and to take over as head of a temple. They hate being there in the first place, but there's no way to avoid it. And on top of all that, they're forced to do zazen. Doing zazen under these conditions is called Jigoku Zen, or Zen of Hell. Kogan talked about that. He said there were, you know, a young man who is inheriting the temple from his dad is sent to Aheiji, and they don't like it. They just have to grit their teeth and go through it. And they beat the tar out of them and make them work really hard. So it's not a healthy situation, which is why Uchi Amaroshi went his own way. He just thought it was not the way. Then there is Gaki Zen. This is the type of Zen done by people who forever go around lusting after enlightenment. That's the Gakis with the big heads and the open mouths trying to eat everything and have such tiny little necks that they can't get anything in there. That's why we have a ceremony in a couple of weeks about the Gakis. We feed them. It's only once a year they're able to eat. Next comes Chikusho Zen. The word Chikusho in Japanese refers to an animal that can be domesticated. Say a dog or a cat or maybe a cow. Now, in that same sense, there are people who enter a monastery because they hear they'll get fed just by following along. Occasionally, those kinds of people even stray into antaiji. They figure that by just being here and sitting in the sesshin, they will be able to get along. When this kind of person shows up, I just have to throw him out. There is an expression, Yoraba Taiju no Kage. It means to look for rest or protection under the shade of a big tree. When people try looking for shade under a scrawny little willow like Antaiji, though, they're looking for it under the wrong tree. I mean, even thinking about being able to eat heartily at Antaiji, there just aren't any big feeds. an itinerant priest thinking he will be well taken care of at Antaiji is really mistaken. That sort of chikusho zen is just no good either. People like that ought to be ashamed of themselves. And actually, that's one of the problems at Jikoji, and always has been, that it looks like, from the outside, it looks like you can just go and kind of glide along and you promise, oh yes, cross my heart, I will sit zazen at 5 o'clock every morning. But once you get there, you can tell right away whether people are serious or they're just finding a place to live because they can't afford anything else. And then that becomes a challenge for everybody living in community when not everybody is devoted to and committed to it. One of the many challenges. Following this is Shura Zen. These are the people who compete with others to gain Satori, or else they vie with one another over whose practice is more severe. Oh, we did that back then. Some of us did that. I didn't do that. You didn't do that. Some of us did. At Hidden Villa. Says some carry around a kiyosaku stick, beating each other with it. That's Shura Zen. And I met somebody who had trained at Green Gulch, who was actually a realtor who was driving me around when I was looking for a home. And he bragged about how he had broken a stick on somebody's back. And I thought, that's why Coben put the stick away. That's not what it was for. Then there is Ningen Zen, the Zen that human beings do solely for utilitarian purposes. This is a thing I was talking about previously, that people doing Zazen to get their head straightened out, or for good health, or sexual stamina, and so forth. Anyway, they do Zazen in order to gain something from it. There are a lot of books out now on humanistic Zen, or Zen for the body, or Zen and psychology. These are clear examples of Ning and Zen, seeking something beneficial for humanity. In any event, the motive for doing Zazen is to get something in return. Sounds pretty good. And I think many of us began with this. In fact, Okamura, I just read a talk that he gave in which he said that he practiced at Antaiji for 10 years just wanting to get his head together and feel better about his life. And after 10 years, he realized that he was just being greedy. He was just developing a kind of greed for something when he wasn't able to be satisfied with himself, basically, his life as it was. Finally, we come to Tenjo Zen. These are the people who want to become hermits. There seem to be quite a number of young Americans who like this kind of Zen. It seems as though these young people are trying to run away from the noise of American materialism. So they go up in the mountains to bathe in the quiet relief they find there. Or when they get bored doing just that, they get caught up in Zen as a hobby and enjoy just polishing the scepter some priests carry around. These people are just practicing Zen as a hobby. Naturally, this sort of hermit Zen has nothing to do with the Buddha Dharma. To figure out whether or not you're practicing true Zazen or not, You have to look at your practice from as broad a perspective as possible. Once you get stuck in one of these six types of Zen, you're no longer able to see an overall view of the Buddha Dharma. It's hard to see what's true when we try to overdevelop our own ambition, our own wish to be different, to be something. It's very tricky to sit and have no gaining idea, as they say. What brings us to the cushion? What keeps us on it if there's nothing to get? And yet we come back over and over. And we don't come back after a while because we want to get something, because we know after a while that there really isn't anything to get. And yet, there's something that can't be said that brings us and holds us here and there and everywhere. This boundlessness with which we participate and from which we live with magnanimous mind. There are lots more of these notes in the back, and I hope you all have a chance to read them because they're really lovely. They're Uchiyama Roshi at his best. But the next thing that we're going to do is to read Uchiyama Roshi's whole commentary, which is much bigger than the Tenzo Kyokun. So I think we'll cover it one chapter at a time. They're fairly short chapters. The first one is about the Tenzo and Shikantaza. The next one is concerning religious life, the true form of the self. Everything you encounter is your life. And he has illustrations in that one, which is really cool. Little funny illustrations. Diagrams. How we can open up a world of communication based on thought. So it's an encounter with a very unusual and really wonderful teacher. So we'll continue with this next week. Are there questions? Sat Sesshin at Antaiji with him. Uchiyama Roshi was a student of Kodo Sawaki Roshi, and he was the little guy who they called homeless Kodo, because he just went around Japan giving sesshin in various places, but didn't have his own place, and was famous for being quite radically outspoken about how decadent Zen was in Japan in those days. They've now published some of his talks, and he was ferocious. He was just, and very outspoken and sort of bawdy. And Uchiyama Roshi was, he was also very charismatic, so many people came. He ended up at Antaiji, which is a little broken down temple outside of Kyoto, where they grew all their own food, which was not very much. They just tried to do everything the exact old Dogen way. One of my sons actually went and sat with them for a little while. He found it very tough. But Uchiyama Roshi was his best student. He was a big guy, a big sort of, I think, slow fellow who had found life very strange and difficult as he lumbered through it, and yet was very, had worked his way deeply into the Dharma. And when Koda Sawaki had to retire, he asked Uchiyama Roshi if he would take over. And he said, oh, I can't do it. There's no way. He said, I can't be a public figure like you. Nobody wants to come and see me. And he said, if I go up to the altar and try to offer incense, I can't do it. I just get all flustered. He said, I can't do it. It's too much for me. And Kodan said, well, then don't do it. You don't have to do that. Just do it the way you think you should do it. And so he did. And while Koban was in school at the university, he would go and sit there and sit sesshin. And Uchiyama Roshi asked, he really begged Koban at a certain point to come and just be a priest, be a student there and practice with him. And Koban decided he really needed to go to Eheiji and do the whole Eheiji thing. So he really is, he's not in our lineage exactly, but he's a cousin or something like that. He's a part of it's part of the mind that Koban brought to us from him and Kodo. Yeah. Thank you. That's a wonderful question. He says in one of his books some of his history, which is why I know it, and from Koban also. But he loved his retirement. People came and brought their questions to him. You know, my husband doesn't like me anymore. And he would, you know, give them tea and calm them down. He said it was a very simple life, and he always read the newspaper, so he knew what people were talking about. And in the evening, he always had a little tot of scotch. Samia?
You said your son went to do sesshin in Japan, right? So that might be a personal question and you don't have to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Did you raise them in hopes that they would end up sitting or doing zazen?
Oh, heavens, no.
No?
No.
So did they just wanted to check it out? Or, I mean, it's not like one day I want to go to a sesshin. It's a hard thing to do. How old was your son?
Well, it wasn't my son, it was my brother.
Oh, your brother.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Did I say my son?
Yes.
Well, actually, my son went there too. But that was another era. No, my brother John went there and actually lived with Gary Snyder and his first wife and practiced it on Taiji. So, and I don't know how he came to Zen. He came to it from a different direction from mine. He just suddenly decided he was going to Japan and figure it out. And he bought from Haiku Zendo, he bought a Zafu and a Zabutan and packed it up with his wife from Lapland, whom he had met in the Canary Islands, and took a boat to Japan. It was back in those days when people did things like that. And he was one of them. So, and ultimately he ended up back in the Canary Islands and became a born-again Christian. So
wow.
It was a big change. Yeah. Yeah. Our parents never could understand their children. Completely bewildered. Two born-again Christians and a Zen priest. Well, it's 8 o'clock. Alas. So let's have our 1 minute sit.